Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. We're going to talk about school lunches today. Now, whether you remember them as culinary masterpieces or daily nightmares, the fact is that the modern provision of food for schools is a complex marvel of human social and technical innovation, with crucial inputs from the agricultural, nutritional, and public health sciences. In the United States, two national programs, the National School Lunch Program and the School Breakfast Program, play key roles in supporting the nutrition and health of school children by providing nutritionally balanced, low-cost, or free lunches every school day. The purpose of the National School Lunch Program, according to its 1946 legislation, is, as a measure of national security, to safeguard the health and well-being of the nation's children and to encourage the domestic consumption of nutritious agricultural commodities and other food. Both the National School Lunch Program and the School Breakfast Program provide an important safety net for low-income children that have to travel long distances to school. Children that live in households whose income is at or below 130% of the federal poverty level are eligible for free school lunch and a free school breakfast. The potential reach of the National School Meal Programs is monumental. The program is available in 99% of U.S. public schools and in 83% of private and public schools combined. The school breakfast program is widely used as well, with 85% of public schools participating in the program. In 2007 alone, schools participating in the meals programs served roughly 5.1 billion lunches and 1.7 billion breakfasts. Last year, the school lunch program provided meals to over 30 million children every single school day. Although the reach of today's national school meal programs is extensive, things have not always been quite so abundant. The National School Lunch Program is over 60 years old, yet various school food services have been carried out in the United States as far back as the 1890s, and some European countries were operating programs even 100 years before that. Back in the late 18th century, one of the major forefathers of school lunch programs was an American-born physicist named Benjamin Thompson. While in Munich in 1790, Benjamin Thompson established the Poor People's Institute, which administered a program for poor, unemployed adults that provided clothing and food in exchange for making clothes for the army. In this program, children were also given the opportunity to work part-time during the morning and afternoon. In the hours between their work schedules, the children were taught reading, writing, and arithmetic. Thompson's expertise in developing public mass feeding programs was highly sought after, and he eventually established major programs in England, Germany, Scotland, France, and Switzerland. One such program in London fed 60,000 people on a daily basis. Over the course of the 19th century, school feeding programs continued to proliferate throughout the rest of Europe, eventually gaining sponsorship by governments. Though the United States was slower to catch on, American programs went through the same evolution as those in Europe. Many of the early U.S. programs were a hodgepodge of locally based food services taken up by private societies and associations concerned about child welfare and education. Early federal assistance in feeding school children came in the form of the Commodity Foods Donation Program. During the Depression, surplus production of farm products became so high that it depressed market prices to a point that crushed the economic livelihoods of farmers. At the same time, many children and families were unable to afford school lunches. So in a stroke of genius, Congress decided to kill two birds with one stone. They set aside funds to purchase the surplus foods that were depressing market prices for farmers and donated portions of that surplus food to families and children in need for school meals. Federal funds gradually expanded over time in order to meet the growing demand for food in schools. But during the Second World War, the huge amount of food required to support troops overseas drew down the agricultural surplus, and it became clear that even more federal funds would be necessary to ensure the sustainability of school food services in the future. In 1946, the 79th Congress decided that school foods could no longer afford to depend on surplus foods that might either be nutritionally unbalanced or unattractive to school children. This led them to pass the National School Lunch Act, bringing into existence the National School Lunch Program. Since the inception of the National School Lunch Program and later the School Breakfast Program, ensuring the provision of healthy, nutritious meals has been of the utmost importance to policymakers and researchers in the fields of nutrition science and public health. Numerous great strides have been made over the years in dietary and nutrition science. So, for instance, in the 1960s and 70s, studies began to show that good, nutritious meals not only promote good physical health, but that they also have a positive effect on the psychological development of children and their ability to learn. And so, because of the continuous progress in understanding human physiology and nutrition, it makes good sense that we should periodically update regulations that govern nutrition standards and requirements for the national school meal programs. This is why the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Agriculture asked the Institute of Medicine to review current regulations for the National School Lunch Program and the School Breakfast Program, and to recommend revisions that will align the standards with the latest dietary and nutritional science. The IOM's recommendations can now be found in the new report, School Meals: Building Blocks for Healthy Children. Under current requirements for school meals, fruits and vegetables are treated together as a single group, without any specifications for the type of vegetables that should be served. This can lead to students choosing only a vegetable or only a fruit, effectively missing out on important nutrients. In response to this problem, the new recommendations from the IOM's committee say that fruits and vegetables should be treated separately in meal planning, with a minimum daily requirement for each. Additionally, the new recommendations specifically state that children should be eating a greater variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and only drinking fat-free or low-fat milk. We've come a long way since the early days of school food programs that were intended to feed undernourished children. Child obesity has become a major public health concern in recent years, and the new recommendations reflect this shift in attitude towards school meals. Previous standards for school meals only set forth a minimum level of calories required for each meal, whereas the new recommendations specify, for the first time, both a minimum and a maximum number of calories. It also looks at the minimum and maximums for saturated fat and sodium that should be present in each school meal. Sodium in particular was a major concern for the IOM. Because foods that are high in sodium are so prevalent, children's palates are highly accustomed to eating very salty food. In order to address this, the report recommends that the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health and Human Services work cooperatively with the food industry and other stakeholder groups to gradually reduce the amount of sodium present in school foods over the course of the next 10 years. It is the hope that by setting a gradual long-term target, children will be less likely to notice the change in how their meals taste, effectively minimizing any threat to student acceptability of lower sodium foods. There are, of course, many challenges to implementing the new recommendations to school meals. In order to promote the change necessary and increase student participation, it will take active engagement with the school community, including nutrition education for both parents and students. School food service employees will need new training and mentoring to prepare meals that meet the updated requirements. And in some cases, schools will need to purchase new equipment. Taken together, all of these changes, including the incorporation of more fruits and vegetables into meals, will likely cost more money. But the IOM is optimistic that with a combination of increased federal reimbursements and capital investments, the higher costs incurred by retraining staff and preparing meals with more basic ingredients can be covered. Over the last few centuries, governments have made great strides in providing low-cost food to those children who need it. Since the inception of the U.S. National School Lunch Program alone, more than 219 billion lunches have been served. The school environment plays a key role in shaping children's health behaviors that they will later adopt over the course of a lifetime. So, it's not enough to just keep our students well-fed anymore. Instead, we have to prepare meals that maintain a healthy nutritional balance based on the latest science. With comprehensive technical assistance from the USDA and the support and involvement of state agencies, professional organizations, the food industry, child advocacy groups, schools, parents, and the students themselves, we can create school meals that will both appeal to students and contribute to their health and well-being. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.